Welcome to the latest edition of the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler, and today is Monday, March 15th. In this episode, we examine an article from the March issue of the journal Oncology titled Factors Associated with Treatment Refusal and Impact of Treatment Refusal on Survival of Patients with Small Cell Lung Cancer. The original research article found that treatment refusal among patients with small cell lung cancer was associated with worse survival, and strategies to increase patient acceptance of the recommended treatment need to be studied further. I spoke with one of the authors, Dr. K.M. Monirol Islam of the Georgia Medical Center, to learn more about this research. Dr. Islam, thank you so much for taking some time to hop on the podcast to speak with me about your work. I was just hoping we could start really with a general kind of background on the research examining these factors associated with treatment refusal, and really specifically what the motivation was for you and your colleagues to pursue this idea.
Well, that's a very important question. So why we have been digging down into this path. One of my passion and my colleagues that we work together, working on the improving the outcomes of lung cancer in general. And I have been funded by the PCORI, which stands for Patient-Centered Outcome Research Institute. And we have been looking into the patients' preferences, or what are the outcomes patients would like to improve and their concern about it. Among the lung cancer patients. And as you know that survival of long-term survival, which we mean like 5-year survival of small cell lung cancer particularly, is still in single digits, which is around 7%. So any area that we could find out where there is a chance to improve the survival, which we are looking for, given the progress in the treatment discovery, new modality of treatment, is still the survival is low. And there are many other factors that affect survival. One of the components that we found out, the patients deliberately opt out or they refuse the treatment. And we were interested to find out what are the factors that patients do not want to go through the treatment that affect their choices of these treatment refusal, given there are many newer treatment and also the improving of, you know, in terms of the survival. So that basically leads us to work on these manuscript.
And so leading right into my next question with this manuscript, you know, what kind of methods did you and your colleagues use to analyze these factors? And was there any kind of early expectations you had with this data?
This is a good methodological question. In fact, as you know, that getting a big number, substantial number of patients into a research, especially for lung cancer, is not easy. It's quite difficult. So we, rather than conducting a prospective cohort study, we use the existing database, which is a national database, a national cancer database, where we had over 100,000 small cell lung cancer patients. And we use this data, and some of the logistic regression techniques and also Kaplan-Meier methods to estimate the survival and also factors associated with the survival among these lung cancer patients to find out the patients, also those who are refusing the treatment, and what are the factors that are associated with the refusal. So that's the method or techniques that we used.
And so off of that, you know, just simply put, what were some of the main findings you had from this research, and what kind of conclusions did they enable you to draw?
Well, if you think about that, treatment refusal, which is not, you know, like 20, 30 or half, you know, 50% patient do not refuse. According to this data and also our study with the CS data that we did in the past, With earlier stage lung cancer, refusal rate is around 1.5 or, you know, in between around. In fact, in this study, we found 1.34% of the earlier stage cancer, they refuse the treatment. Contrary, extended stage, which is 2B and above stage of lung cancer, small cell lung cancer, the refusal rate we found 4.7%. If you translate that into numbers, if you have 1 million patients, 100,000 patients, then you can see that over a substantial number of patients, they are refusing treatment. We know the survival, significantly impact by the treatments with the appropriate or recommended treatment rather. And if they refuse the treatment, obviously survival will be low compared to those who reduce. In fact, we found that exactly the same. Survival rate among the patients, those who refuse the treatment, is much lower compared to those who have gone through the recommended treatment.
And so towards the end of your research, you and your colleagues recommend that strategies to increase patient acceptance of the recommended treatment need to be studied further. What would you specifically recommend researchers kind of look at to learn more about this area?
But this is one of the things that we think, because patients heavily rely on their clinical, whether it's a physician, those who provide their clinical care for the lung cancer, they heavily depends on them in terms of their choices, preferences. And as you know, when the lung cancer diagnosis is given to a patient, it's pretty much still now is like death sentence, right? So they are really that kind of shock, and getting through all the processes and all the information out in internet, sometimes they are not able to process and get the right decision. So the way we think, there is a substantial patient-centered research to find out their preferences and their choices, and accordingly design intervention which can the healthcare provider support or provide them appropriate recommendations, so that they, rather than refusing treatment, it's their choice, we cannot force them, but we wanted to make sure they understand the consequences, provide them a good deal of information, and support them to making decisions so that they can make the right decision.
Absolutely. And lastly, is there anything about your research that I haven't asked about that you think is really important to share here?
Well, this, again, I emphasize on the patient-centered outcome research. As a clinician and researcher, so we always think, what would be the best way to improve the survival? What would be the best way to provide patients comfort, et cetera? We really need to focus on what is patient's preference of the outcomes? What are the things they are expecting from us? Is the survival alone, or is there anything other along with survival? In fact, I have several other papers, at least 5 or 6 papers that we published in line of these, which is exploring the patient's preferences in terms of the lung cancer treatment and their choices.
Well, that's great. Dr. Islam, those are all the questions I had for you. It's really intriguing research, and I really appreciate you spending some time with me to speak about it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I hope the audience will be helpful. And if they have any questions, they can look for my other supplemental studies or communicate with me. I'd be more than happy to provide additional information.
Thank you so much. That sounds fantastic. All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your day, Dr. Islam. Take care.
Thank you.
For this episode's response perspective, I spoke with Dr. Jennifer Carlisle, an assistant professor of hematology and medical oncology at Winship Cancer Institute of Emory University. Carlisle spoke about small cell lung cancer, how treatment refusal impacts treatment, and plenty more regarding the details of this research. So, Dr. Carlisle, thank you so much for jumping on this pod to speak with me a little bit. I was hoping to just really start with a background of small cell lung cancer treatment refusal. You know, why do you think this is a topic of interest, and what can be learned from examining the factors that are associated with refusal?
I think treatment refusal is an important topic across, you know, solid and liquid malignancies. It's maybe a little more pertinent in small cell lung cancer because this is really a devastating diagnosis with a poor prognosis. Small cell lung cancer affects around 15% of patients with lung cancer. And fortunately, this incidence is decreasing with tobacco cessation efforts. Prior to late 2018 or so, there really was no change in the last few decades with regards to treatment of small cell lung cancer. There were minor adjustments in radiation schedule for limited stage disease, but really we hadn't made much progress. I do think it's important to note for readers of this paper to know that there have been changes in the last couple of years, specifically with extensive stage disease, and this is with the addition of immunotherapy. We have currently two different options approved, atezolizumab or durvalumab in combination with platinum and etoposide for frontline treatment. And while the difference in median overall survival compared to chemo alone is just about 2 months in both of these trials, it doesn't capture the tail of the curve where we're seeing longer term survival in those who respond to immunotherapy. So I think, especially with new treatment options and some hope for longer term survival, especially in extensive stage disease, it's really important that patients understand that they don't need to give up right away. But there are important factors to consider. Not everyone is really fit for treatment, and patients obviously have the right to refuse treatment if they don't want it.
Right, and you mentioned this a little bit that the research team kind of discussed, which is extensive stage small cell lung cancer. They found that from 2003 to 2012, the trends show an increase of refusals, especially among this cohort of patients who were recommended chemotherapy. Is this a significant development, or is this something you've seen in the industry for quite a while already?
It's hard to say. The increase was quoted as, I believe, 50%, but it was from, you know, 1 to 2% to 3 to 4% mm-hmm. range. So they're still relatively small numbers. The time frame that they did this large retrospective analysis from the National Cancer Database of over, 100,000 patients was when we didn't really have any new options to consider. So we have to take into account like what time frame these patients were diagnosed and treated. I think it's distressing for medical oncologists to meet patients who are swayed by advertising, often from for-profit companies looking at alternative treatments that have not been FDA approved nor studied in randomized controlled trials. So I think there may be a component of patients opting for non-standard therapy because this is becoming more and more rampant and more available to both patients and their caregivers who are looking, like desperately searching, to be honest, for something they can do different or better than what's out there. So I think there is a component of alternative unproven therapies that may be what patients are looking for, unfortunately.
Yeah, and another factor that they mentioned was, you know, these factors such as older age at diagnosis, female gender, uninsured status, and treatment in a comprehensive community cancer program were all associated with treatment refusal. In your opinion, why do you think these factors are associated with refusal, and what can be done to address the decision making for these patients who fit these descriptions?
Now, I couldn't quite tell from the manuscript if these were all patients that were offered chemotherapy, because older age and the presence of comorbidities can certainly limit patients' performance status. And we know that cytotoxic chemotherapy in patients that are bedbound or nearly bedbound may actually be more dangerous and harmful than helpful. So there's certainly some patients who should not receive therapy and would be better served with a supportive care approach addressing their symptoms. The gender component was interesting because women actually have improved overall survival compared to men in both small cell and non-small cell lung cancer. We don't understand why physiologically. So the fact that women are more likely to refuse treatment that they would numerically do better than men in is interesting. The authors of this paper hypothesize about potentially women favoring improved quality of life over quantity of life, potentially being more concerned about increased toxicity. And they even mentioned that women may have more specific plans later in life that they want to do rather than go to treatment. There's so much we don't really know yet about gender differences in lung cancer, and especially small cell lung cancer. So I think this area needs to be looked into further with broader, more comprehensive and prospective analyses that include these topics like quality of life and toxicity. I'm also surprised about the Comprehensive Cancer Center notation about patients potentially refusing more. I don't know if there is a little bit of a selection bias in the data, and that the authors note these large databases don't aren't perfect at capturing all the new diagnoses. And I wonder if comprehensive centers are better at getting all of their data reported, whereas smaller places may not, just in terms of the operational logistics of it. So we are missing about 25% of patients in these analyses. And I don't know if there's a discrepancy between centers for that. I think one other thing they mentioned was uninsured status. And while small cell lung cancer chemo was maybe around $10,000 for a 4 or 6 cycle treatment course, this doesn't include the very expensive, newly approved, and important to include agents, immunotherapy agents, which are making a dent in the, you know, poor prognosis. So cost is certainly an issue. And this is very important to make sure patients diagnosed with cancer get some sort of emergency coverage for treatment.
And so you kind of alluded to this next question, but the research team concludes that strategies to increase patient acceptance of the recommended treatment need to be studied further. Is there any way you would recommend investigative teams go about examining these strategies, and specifically when looking at the piece there? Is there anything that kind of, you know, alludes to potential areas of interest for this area?
I think it's an important topic, but hard to quantify objectively because so much of this relies on a physician, patient, and family interaction, and honestly, frank discussion about what a diagnosis of small cell lung cancer means. It's not a discussion that can be done in just a few minutes. Oftentimes, patients are so still in shock from hearing this bad news. They don't, you know, it's hard to absorb all of the decisions and like details that go into deciding treatment. But I think it's very important to treat newly diagnosed, whether it's, let's start with extensive stage disease, differently than relapsed small cell lung cancer, because we know most patients with extensive stage disease, that their life expectancy would be around 1 month without treatment and improved by 6 months with treatment. That's generally well tolerated. And that was shown in this paper. And I think it's important for patients to have that kind of time to decide what they want, see how they tolerate treatment, and make end of life decisions. And it's hard to do that when with very progressive symptoms from small cell lung cancer. Extensive stage disease, even more so important to have a long discussion, because even though this is a very scary diagnosis, up to 20% of patients are cured with chemo and radiation. So you know, it's very important. And I think that's partially why less patients refuse treatment for limited stage disease.
So I guess looking ahead, generally speaking, you know, taking a step back, how do you see the field of small cell lung cancer evolving, and how does this research, you know, fit into the paradigm and maybe push the field forward?
There's a ton of good work going on looking for new targets in the salvage setting. We have immunotherapy options if patients didn't get them in the frontline setting, although most patients with extensive stage disease should be treated with immunotherapy in the frontline. I know this is anecdotal, but I have patients that have been on maintenance immunotherapy for a year or more following their initial diagnosis, which is well beyond the median overall survival. But when small cell recurs, which it very frequently does, we need new targets. So some of those are looking at markers like DLL3 and novel ways to bring the immune system in to treat the tumor, like bispecific antibodies. We have new cytotoxic chemotherapeutics. Recently, lurbinectedin was approved, although we're still awaiting ongoing data to confirm this efficacy. In the limited stage setting, in order to move the bar here, a large trial run by NRG, LU005, is looking at the randomized study of chemoradiation versus chemoradiation plus atezolizumab. So seeing if we can push immunotherapy into the limited stage setting and improve overall survival there. So there's a lot going on, more than I can talk about here, but there's finally a bunch of new treatment strategies that are being investigated for small cell lung cancer.
Absolutely. And lastly, is there anything that I haven't asked you regarding maybe the manuscript or the field in general that you think is important to share in this space?
I think we hit the big topics, but I would just want to emphasize that it's important to make sure that patients feel supported in this decision-making process. And it's a lot to go through from a family, financial, emotional, lifestyle, et cetera, standpoint. And we have data in lung cancer that patients actually do better with the additional support of palliative care, not right at the end, but even from diagnosis, to go through some of these decisions together. So I think it's really important to kind of support the patient and their family as a whole and not just focus on the treatment piece. And that may be how we can help people who are otherwise fit and able to get treatment, get through it so they can have more time.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Carlisle, those are all the questions I had for you. You know, thank you so much for your time and your valuable perspective. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And you can listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, make sure to leave a 5-star rating and review to tell us what you think and what you want to hear more about. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, you can visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter @CancerNetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn @CancerNetwork.